Hello, people. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's another Monday for us. For you, it's Tuesday. But it's another Monday for us, and we are here on Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor wrestling. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I do written reports on ROH television, as well as live events such as this week's forthcoming Honor United tour. I also contribute to the Wednesday podcast PWT Talks NXT and a new third podcast, which we'll talk about shortly. I'm joined this week by the best Super Junior I know, Emily Fear.
Yes, I'm definitely Block A all the way. I'm Em. I recently joined Talking Honor a few weeks back and am also a part of this unnamed special new podcast. And I talk about wrestling as well as many other things on my Twitter at ForkedPGH on Twitter. So, yeah, that's where you can find me and all my thoughts about wrestling, especially on Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling.
And you attended live this current set of ROH television tapings.
Yes, it feels so weird to finally see the final episode from that TV taping.
Yeah, when did this take place?
It was in April. It was the second weekend of April.
So it was six weeks ago.
Yeah, so it was the weekend, the Saturday after Supercard of Honor. So I think it was like the 14th or something. And yeah, so it's been over a month, and all the wrestling that I've seen taped, I already knew the outcome, so it's going to be interesting to watch the episodes going in blind again. So I'm looking forward to that, but it's a little sad.
Yeah, next week you get brand new footage and you have no idea what's going on. Every week, because I don't read the spoilers.
Yes, just like the rest of you lay people, I'm back to not knowing what's going to happen. Unless I want to read the spoilers, which I don't.
No. You don't want to find out what happens in the world of Bernard and Barry?
I'm going to guess that Bernard, I don't know what happened to Barry. Like, we haven't seen Barry since the 16th anniversary. But Bernard, I mean, I just assume that every time he makes an appearance, he's going to take a bump.
Except he did not this week.
Right?
What?
Okay.
I had that in my notes because that was unexpected.
Yes, and we didn't know that was going to be a running joke when we saw the TV taping, because Bernard had just been introduced at Supercard of Honor. So it didn't shock us at the time, but going back and watching the episode, it was very odd to be like, so no harm has come to Bernard. I guess maybe they didn't make the decision to repeat that bump until after that TV taping.
Maybe it's like one of these Berenstain Bears alternate universe things where on television, he's fine. It's on the Honor Club where he's screwed.
Oh, okay. Well, then he has to stay off of all Honor Card and pay-per-views.
Evidently. So a couple of big announcements from ROH this year, or this week, rather. First, the new Ring of Honor app is done. It's up. You can download it on your phone, on your Android devices. What's an Android device? Is that a phone?
Yes.
I don't know technology people. But there's an app. There's a brand new app. You can download it. If you have Honor Club especially, definitely download the app. I did. It's super easy. It's and you can stream, you know, all the Honor Club content right on your phone. So if you're stuck somewhere with Wi-Fi and then, I don't know, in a waiting room or in a cafe or whatever, you can watch your old ROH footage right there. So that's up. That's cool. Also, even more exciting news for a lot of people I know. They announced that ROH Year 1 is going to be added to the Honor Club very soon. And this is all 12 ROH events from their very first year of existence, 2002.
That is so exciting. For someone like myself who is very excited to see the root of the roots of this promotion, I'm psyched to get to delve into that when it's released.
Yeah, I've never gone back and watched all the old stuff in the beginning. I think I actually tried maybe a year ago to watch the very first ROH event, The Era of Honor Begins, and I tried to find it to stream. I tried to look for an illegal torrent, and I had no luck finding anything. So I'm especially excited to go back 16 years ago and watch Daniel Bryan, Eddie Guerrero, Loki, AJ Styles, the Briscoes, when they were just young little chicken farmers instead of these old grizzled chicken farmers.
When they were faces. I mean, we're going to get to see it all for the first time.
Yeah, and they said all 12 events are kind of being added at the same time, packaged as year one, which is really cool. I love that idea.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how they handle this release, you know, releasing this footage from prior years in the future, just because they're doing year one. Like, what does that mean? Is it going to be like next year when we get year two, or are they going to start batch releasing these every couple of months?
It's definitely like year one, since this was the first year, they only had 12 events. I think by year two, they're up to 20, 30 different events. So that's going to be the difference maker as well, obviously. But I'd imagine that if year one is being added now, they're going to be trying their best to have year two available sometime this summer.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to make us wait another until 2019.
What do you think this is going to do for their fan base? Do you think this is going to allow them to expand to even more people? Because I feel like with WWE making their content available, making a lot of past content available, did build their fan base even more substantially than it already had been. Although, like, it's kind of hard to even say that given how big they are. But with Ring of Honor being at such a big moment of wrestling fandom right now, do you think that making this year one collection available, moving on through their history and sharing it with people who are subscribers, do you think that that's going to grow their fan base even more?
You would think so. I mean, when Honor Club launched and it became known that there wasn't any footage prior to the past 4 or 5 years, a lot of people online were like, oh, well, I'm not getting Honor Club then. That's the whole reason I signed up, was so I could see this old footage from the early years. And if that's not on there, then I'm not interested. So you would think this would be the difference maker that gets those people on board. But at the same time, it's the internet. I mean, 9 times out of 10, people are full of BS. They say like, oh, that's the reason why I didn't sign up, and now it's available. And they'll say, well, now I'm not signing up because, you know, there's no events from 2005 there. It's, I don't know. I'm skeptical of anybody who's outraged on the internet.
It's exciting for me because I'm my day job is a librarian, and I feel like the more this content is accessible and widely accessed, the more people will have it and get excited about what is coming out now. I see like a lot of great potential in a future of Ring of Honor where their back catalog is available to all their subscribing members, and that's, you know, that enriches the field of professional wrestling and the cultural conversation around it. So I'm really glad that they're putting it in this digital media. I'm glad that they're making it accessible. And I really hope that we see like year two and year three, et cetera, within a short time span. It's exciting to get all this content.
Yeah. And you'd think that would appeal to certain, I mean, they've been doing right now like little collections, sort of like best of collections on the site. They did one for Daniel Bryan. They just did one for Kevin Owens. They did one for CM Punk. So they're trying to reach out to those people in that way as well. And you'd think that's logical. I mean, here's some of the top names in all of professional wrestling right now. And you have footage of them as young little kids. Why not? Why not sell that?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when so many of them are like major stars now.
Yeah. So I don't know. We no date on when year one is going to be added to Honor Club, but the fact that they're even acknowledging it or announcing this publicly makes me think soon. You know, they're not going to say like, yeah, it's coming soon, and then that's 3 months later, there's still nothing. I've got to imagine in the next couple of weeks, probably. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely update you on here when that happens. And I don't know, maybe you and I can do a bonus episode of this or something, looking at some of those old shows from the beginning.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I'm in. I will say, though, with this, I think it's going to guarantee another uptick in traffic for their site, for their app. I really want to encourage Ring of Honor to invest substantially in that back end, in that tech infrastructure, because the biggest complaint that I hear from people who are subscribers to Honor Club is the technical difficulties that they face. And I don't feel like adding more content is going to make that problem go away. It's only going to make things worse. If they're not invested in their infrastructure, if they're not like taking care of their back end, making sure that their, you know, tech and customer service is up to date and on task with this. Expansion is awesome, but they need to really invest in that expansion to make it, actually accessible.
Yeah, definitely. And I know my number one biggest complaint with ROH has always just been the customer service. It's damn near impossible to get a response from them on Twitter or through email or anything. If you do have an issue with something, it's always just been radio silence anytime I've tried. I think it was Supercard of Honor. There were a lot of issues. And so to apologize to people, they said, if you're a VIP Honor Club subscriber, we'll give you $40 gift card essentially to use in the Honor Club store. And I didn't have any issues with Supercard. I streamed it perfectly fine. But I'm like, hey, if they're going to give me $40 to spend, I'm going to take it, right? I'll get myself a new Marty Skrull shirt or something. When I tried, coupon code would not work for me for some reason. Could not get it to process. I emailed them about it. They never responded. And here we are a month later. I just gave up. So I never got my $40 coupon. I never got any free ROH merch because yet another customer service technical issue on their end screwed up the refund on the previous technical issue.
Yeah. And, every business is going to have its issues. And obviously, they are getting a giant flux of new fans and utilizing their resources. They really have to take care of that and do it and improve things quickly, because, if fans can't stream your content, if we can't access reliably, we've been testing the Roku app for Ring of Honor, for Honor Club, and it was out for almost an entire week after the War of the Worlds tour. So, that's not great. That's a way in which people need to be able to watch your content that, like, you're not taking care of. And I know that it's a developing app and you're working out the kinks, but it's like, you guys got to really put your money where your mouth is on this. You're making this content available. You're bigger than ever before. You've got a lot of different versions of sharing systems now. You need to make sure that those systems are working and that your customer service is prepared to handle issues as they arise.
Well, I think this week's going to be a good test because we've got three tour shows happening, Honor United, and they're happening from overseas. We're over in the UK for these shows. So listeners, if you have any issues streaming any of these shows, or if you don't have issues, they work out great and everything's perfect, let us know. TalkingHonor@gmail.com, and we'll try to gauge as to whether or not things are getting better on ROH's end, or if we're still in that finicky period.
Yep.
So speaking of new developments and new things, we sort of confirmed last week that you and I are doing a little spin-off of this show.
That's right. We're breaking off from ourselves and spinning off into a specific direction.
Yeah, usually the spin-off is you take the wacky neighbor and you give that guy his own sitcom. But in this case, it's just us moving into the complex next door.
Yeah, while retaining this complex as well. So we have this house and we decided to buy another one. A vacation home, maybe? Maybe the new podcast is our vacation home.
It's like, it's like when The Office was so popular that they gave Michael a spinoff show set at home in addition to the show set at The Office, right?
Wait, that didn't actually happen, right?
Oh, it happened. It lasted a good six seasons, and it was terrific television.
That's a terrible idea.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harlaw talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
No. Okay, so we're doing a spinoff show dedicated to Being the Elite, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega's YouTube series. If you don't watch Being the Elite, you're seriously missing out, and you'd probably be enjoying ROH television a lot more, I think. If you do watch it, you know how good this is, and you know that we can easily fill an hour every week talking about it, or in the case of our first episode, 2 hours.
Who knew that so many ridiculous juvenile jokes would have us talking for 2 hours? But there's a lot to talk about.
Yes. So the show is officially entitled Elite Repeat. The cast lineup is myself, Emily, and our new friend Tempest, who is a pro wrestler in training out of Florida. And the three of us will be discussing old episodes of Being the Elite every week on the show. We'll go back to the end of the series, and we'll be looking at a couple of episodes in order, and we'll be discussing them, reviewing them, looking at how Being the Elite grows over time, how it begins to shape events in ROH and New Japan, character growth, all those things, right from the very beginning. Our first episode is in the can, and it will be available for Pro Wrestling Torch VIP subscribers later this week. I don't have a set date yet. I'm guessing maybe Wednesday at the earliest, but, you know, if you follow either of us on Twitter, we'll be sure to let you know the second that it's posted.
Yes. Find us. Find Elite Repeat. We're only one episode in, and I think we are already in motion to really capitalize off of the shenanigans in this ridiculous series that has become its own little mini like wrestling revolution. But in addition to Ring of Honor episode this week, we also saw some action from our friends in New Japan Pro Wrestling. This week kicked off the annual Best of Super Juniors tournament. The tournament happens every year. A lot of great names have come through there. Probably a lot of names that you would recognize in the last several years. Of course, legends like Jushin Thunder Liger have been Best of Super Junior winners. This year's blocks contain a couple of ROH stars, including Flip Gordon and Marty Scurll. Flip is in Block A and Scurll is in Block B, so it'll be interesting to see. There's already been some matches, and so it's not looking like this will happen, but it would be very interesting to see if we get a Flip on Scurll match. Also, for those who are just into Bullet Club in general, Best of Super Juniors marks the Bullet Club debut of Ishimori, who is the new Bone Soldier. He was unveiled by Tama Tonga at Wrestling Dantaku back at the beginning of May. After Ospreay retained his belt for the IWGP Junior Championship, Tama Tonga brought out the new Bone Soldier, and it was revealed to be Ishimori, who immediately laid out Ospreay, and that was the challenge that has led them into Best of Super Juniors. And Ishimori, as probably the folks at the brand new PW Torch New Japan Pro Wrestling podcast Lioncast would agree, Ishimori is definitely a lot of people's favorite to win this tournament. It would make a lot of sense for the storyline that they're building between him and Ospreay, and it would take them into Dominion with a big match. But for those of you who are just a ROH fan strictly, you can check out online Flip and Skrull doing their thing over New Japan.
There you go. And yeah, Bullet Club is still, it's so weird in that it exists in two different promotions, but they feel like totally separate entities. Like, I don't know, do you think we're going to see Ishimori in ROH anytime soon?
It wouldn't be outlandish to think so, considering he's a Bullet Club guy and New Japan and ROH have a good deal. And I mean, a lot of the people that are featured in this year's Best of Super Juniors, you may have seen on the War of the Worlds tour. One of the favorites to win this tournament is also Hiromu Takahashi, who we saw a bunch of last week. Also, we've got, I'm so sorry. I also left out an ROH guy. Chris Sabin is one of the competitors in this year's tournament. He is in B block along with Skrull. Sabin is wrestling as a single, so no Alex Shelley. But in addition to that, we've got Sho and Yo, who are also on the War of the Worlds tour, and we've got Bushi. So yeah, I would not surprise me if we got a Ishimori appearance at some point in ROH.
Well, yeah, they do have the talent sharing agreement. So we see ROH guys in New Japan, vice versa. We got some New Japan guys on the ROH tour this week. But I'm just thinking, I don't know, I've been watching ROH for 7 or 8 years now. And, like, I don't think I've ever seen Bad Luck Fale wrestle. I don't really know anything about Chase Owens. Even the Gorillas of Destiny, I'm only vaguely acquainted with. And yet there are these big members of Bullet Club, you know, you think I watch ROH every week, I watch Being the Elite, and yet these guys who are in the same stable as the Young Bucks and Skrull, I barely know anything about.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be a line between New Japan Bullet Club and like ROH Bullet Club. I mean, it's not a line, like they are clearly they're both in each promotion, but we definitely see a lot less of some of the New Japan guys in ROH or any other like related in any other like wrestling spheres. And I'm not exactly sure why. It could be contractual obligations. It could just be like general reluctance to want to do all that traveling. Bad Luck Fale has been doing this for so long and for a while now, and maybe doesn't necessarily like need to do ROH, but it does kind of surprise me. You have someone like Chase Owens, who does make appearances in Being the Elite, who is a Bullet Club member, is a Westerner. So he could make an appearance in ROH and fans could get to like Western fans could get better acquainted with Mr. Owens. But we just don't see that. And I'm not really sure why.
Well, OK, I've got a lot of questions about Bullet Club. So let's just go into this week's ROH television main event, because like usual, Bullet Club were the main event of ROH television.
Yes.
I was thinking this week, actually, you know, we did at the beginning of the year, Lola, my former co-host, and I did an ROH depth chart, kind of trying to place where everybody is in the ROH hierarchy. You know, who's the undercard wrestlers, who are the top, like the top, top main eventers, mm-hmm. and so on. And I don't know if it's just been this past month or with the Honor Club shows, but for me, it really feels like if you ask me who the top names are in ROH at the moment, I put the Young Bucks at number one, above Castle, above Lethal, above Skrull.
Oh, yeah. For ROH, absolutely. I would say it's Young Bucks very, very closely followed by Skrull, like a hairline close.
Yeah, Skrull over Cody.
Yeah, Skrull over Cody. Cody's very over, but Skrull, I was just talking about this yesterday when I was rewatching this episode. Skrull is so over at Ring of Honor. And one of the ways that you can really get a sense of that is when you watch him in New Japan. He's over in New Japan Pro Wrestling too. Like, he's very popular over there. And Japanese fans just generally are a little bit more subdued in the way that they like show their like excitement for wrestlers. That being said, he's nowhere near as over in New Japan as he is in ROH. The kind of pops that he receives, I mean, he doesn't have to do hardly anything in the ring, and he just makes his entrance and people are wild. He's very, very over. So with him and the Bucks, it's almost neck and neck, but I would give the edge to the Bucks just just slightly.
Yeah, and they main event more. I mean, you look at the couple of tours that we had, all the Honor Club events we had this past month, they main evented a bunch of times, partly because Castle was out on injury, but also because ROH knew we can put these guys in main event, people will stay tuned in, it'll be a hell of a match. And I guess that's the difference between them and Skrull a little bit too, is I feel like they can be relied on to have an amazing match a little bit better than Skrull can.
Well, Skrull's doing a lot of time as a third, as a, like a, you know, in six man work. And he really does excel in like stealing the spotlight in those moments. He gets a lot of great moments just from being in these six man matches. As far as his individual wrestling goes, he's great. He has done some really great matches with ROH. I think that they are keeping him in six man's right now to keep him healthy and like for the coming challenges and stuff. Also, Skrull works everywhere, as do the Bucks. I mean, the Bucks continue to work in a lot of various places, but Skrull is still, I mean, he's doing New Japan, he's doing ROH, he's doing like Progress. He does a lot of UK-based promotions. He's everywhere. So it could also be a scheduling issue too, of like when we can use him versus when they can use the Bucks, which is they seem to have a bit more frequent access to the Bucks.
Yeah, and I guess they're in terms of alignment as well. Young Bucks are clear baby faces at this point. I don't think there's anybody who would try to claim that they're still heels. They don't cheat. They're massively popular. They're always fighting from underneath. Matt's selling his back in every match that he has. Whereas Marty's more shades of gray still. He's kind of like Eddie Guerrero, where he's the lovable villain. He cheats and he throws flour in people's faces, but we like him when he does it. But I don't know. Like, one week he'll be against Punishment Martinez and Shane Taylor, and then the next week he'll be wrestling against, I feel like, the boys, right? So it's a little bit harder to, I guess, I don't know. Is it harder to root for him or to position him firmly in a spot on the card when he's not in either camp?
I think he can be relied on to be an audience draw, because when you watch a Skrull match, you don't really know exactly what kind of Skrull you're going to get. And seeing his work in the six man, especially when he's with Cody, it's always interesting to see like who's the audience sympathy is going to lie with, because Skrull is a really good wrestler, but he also is excellent at character work in and out of the ring. Like this guy knows his character 100%, and people are eating it up. So when you see a match between Skrull and Dalton Castle, a Castle fan like myself is going to root for Castle, because I just always root for Castle. But it's exciting to see what kind of Skrull we're going to get in that solo match. When you see him in a six-man, it builds empathy for him a little bit more, because especially with the work he's doing with Cody, we see the like reasonable frustrations that his character is having with being stuck in like a second fiddle spot. It's really interesting actually to talk about Skrull and his kind of flexible like in between face and heel, because in New Japan Pro Wrestling he's also like he's much more in the heel mode, and yet people still love him, because like sometimes your heels are going to be way more honest and say things more directly than your faces are. So at the beginning of in the press conference for the Best of Super Juniors tournament, he gets up there and, says that the junior division deserves attention, deserves to be as great as it is. He knows that it's great, and he wants to like be in the junior division and make it as great and continue like building its success in the junior division. And he takes all these shots at like heavyweights and people who move up to heavyweights, leaving behind the junior division, even though it's some of the most exciting wrestling you're going to see is junior heavyweight wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling. So Skrull is like oddly sympathetic, even when he's doing things like breaking people's fingers and throwing powder in their faces. It's just always interesting to see what Skrull we're going to get when a match happens.
And I think stuff like him singing Avril Lavigne on Being the Elite certainly doesn't hurt his popularity either.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, like, again, he's got his character figured out. So his in-ring presence is contrasted with this, like, real goofy guy, this, you know, all these silly elements that are, like, filmed out of ring. And it just makes a really, like, dynamic and attractive package for viewers to come into. And I think it's always surprising to see, like, that contrast played out in the ring. And when you are reminded, like, oh, yeah, he's a heel, so he's going to do some really nasty moves. It's just jarring for people who go from ROH Mardy Skrull to New Japan Mardy Skrull, where Skrull is still very much in ring, like, as a heel.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Well, so this week on ROH, main event was Cody, Marty, and Hangman against SoCal Uncensored. Not for the six-man titles, because neither of these teams are the six-man champions, despite how they were introduced on television.
Yeah, the awkward moment when what you do at a house show comes back at you.
But, I mean, SoCal didn't have the belts with them regardless, because at the time this was taped, the Kingdom had stolen the titles. So, it kind of, I don't know. That's fine. Whatever. This was, a fine match. Not outstanding, but your standard kind of TV multi-man Bullet Club main event, which is still better than a lot of standard TV main events, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're still getting to watch some top talent do some really good spots. You're still getting some really fun moments. It was a fun one to watch live, I'll say. The long count out where everyone has to jump back in at 19, that was a great moment. It's not like, you know, we've definitely seen better TV matches. I personally think there was a better TV match in this very same episode. But, you know, you get exactly what you want, and you get left with a little bit extra at the end to continue building the story.
Yeah, so we got follow-up on the conflict, growing conflict, growing issues between Cody and Marty. Early in the match, Cody goes for a beautiful disaster kick on, I want to say, Daniels. Daniels ducks, and Cody takes out Marty.
Mm-hmm.
Then after the match, Bullet Club picks up the win. Hangman Page hits the rite of passage on Scorpio Sky.
That's a great sequence, just because something happens right before then, too. But the ending result with Hangman doing the rite of passage and getting the pin, that whole last, like, 20 seconds is awesome.
Yeah, I feel like Hangman's been slipping back a little bit again. You know, like, two or three months ago, I thought this guy's going to be TV champion by the summer. And now I don't really know. I mean, he's feuding with Punishment Martinez on the Honor Club circuit. That hasn't translated to television yet. I'm guessing that'll probably start next week.
I'm going to feel like next week. And I feel like they're playing a real long game with Hangman. There are moments watching this match where I just kept looking at what he was going to do, because him ringside is always the potential for something really big to happen. I think he's starting to get a reputation for building these big moments. So I don't necessarily worry about it, like, match to match. I think he's starting to carry momentum in the way that if he appears ringside, if he is in a six man, if he has a match coming, there's excitement. There's expectation. There's anticipation building with him. I see this guy, and I see like, he's the guy. Like, he's the wrestler. He's like the Hollywood Blondes. He's the man. Like, he's going to have a long, long career. And I think his momentum is just getting started. I think the people behind him, I think ROH, they see a long story for Hangman.
I definitely think he's slated for some sort of hardcore no disqualification match with Punishment Martinez at Best in the World, June 29th.
Mm-hmm.
That would definitely be a possibility for another star-making performance. Because when's the last time Hangman has had a big singles match on a show?
His
feud with Kaz last summer?
Yeah, it's been a while for ROH. And again, this is where, like, following New Japan Pro Wrestling gets like so murky because, you know, he's done a fair amount of individual, like big, well, he had a big solo match at Supercard of Honor against Ibushi.
Oh, right. I totally forgot. Well, I forgot about that. That's sad because it was a great match.
It was a great match. I mean,
it didn't stick in my memory for.
And that's funny, actually, because the first match I went back to watch after Supercard, like days later, was that match because, you know, in the like momentum of the evening, obviously the emphasis gets put on the Cody and Kenny fight and the Castle and Skrull fight. But that match against Ibushi is just, it's fantastic. It's paced perfectly. It's got just the right amount of spots. It's just the amount of right of strong and fluid. And you see the same thing happen when he solo wrestles in New Japan. It was a very New Japan match in my mind for a Supercard. And I think that it marks how malleable and flexible Hangman's style is. He's going to come out strong, but he's going to be able to meet someone with a style like Ibushi perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, my hope right now is he gets a big win over Punishment at Best in the World, June 29th, and then spends maybe July, August feuding with Silas Young for the TV title. I think Hangman and Silas would be a terrific feud, not just from in-ring, but their personalities. And what Silas always brings out the best character work of people, I find.
Yeah, I would really like to see that kind of bar fight style of Silas versus that strong style of Paige. I feel like even a lesser match from them is going to be worth seeing. But building that rivalry is going to mean working through this Martinez storyline, which, you know, what happens to Punishment after that? Like, I only see good things for Hangman. I'm a little concerned about Punishment, especially following this week's match with Jay Lethal, especially, you know, feeling like Hangman is going to get the better half of the storyline going into Best of the World. Like, what do we do with Martinez after that?
That is always a question. Let's come back to that in a couple minutes.
Okay.
last thing I was going to say about this Bullet Club match. So after the match, Bullet Club picks up the win. SoCal and Censor jump them. We get this week it is Kaz's turn to hit the low blow on, I think, Hangman with the umbrella. I can't remember. We can't get out. It's obligatory. Every week somebody has to take a low blow on ROH television. It's the rule.
Yes.
So this week it was Kaz who got to hit the low blow with the umbrella. Marty gets the umbrella back, swings at Daniels. Daniels ducks again, and this time it's Marty clocking Cody in the head with the umbrella.
Yes.
So more conflict between Cody and Marty. That's clearly been bubbling up. They both feel like they should be the one to challenge Dalton Castle for the title at Best in the World. And on the same episode, Cody and Brandy announced that it's him. He's challenging for the belt. He's cashing his rematch and he's getting his match on June 29th.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
I think we've talked about this prediction before, but I'm going to guess that is going to change. That lineup will change getting closer to Best in the World.
Yeah. I mean, Marty has his defy or deny title shot that he earned in that match. And I'm still banking everything on a triple threat.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking as well. With one of two outcomes, I feel like they are going to pass the title over. I think it's going to keep Castle healthy and to compensate for his injuries and just to move things along. As much as it pains me to say it, I think they're going to pass the title from Castle to one of the guys. So how does it work? Does Skrull get the title and then like gets to be the top guy while Cody's back there trying to come back? Or does Cody get to be the top guy preventing audiences from getting what they want, which is a Skrull and the title? I think if they were savvy, they would delay gratification a little bit longer and allow Cody to get back some of the heel heat that he's lost in ROH and give the title to Cody and prevent Marty from getting it for a little bit longer.
But okay, of the two of them, you think Cody's the heel?
Yes.
But I seem to recall last week on ROH television when Cody valiantly ran down to the ring to save the Young Bucks from the Briscoes and got beat up with chains and chairs, and Marty Skrull was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I know, but I don't. I see Cody as the heel, and I think that Cody has lost a little bit of heel heat in ROH that he's going to get back by getting this title.
Well, so I was a little disappointed here that we didn't get follow-up on that from last week. I think last week on the podcast I said we'll probably get something next week explaining why Marty wasn't there when Cody was and Hangman and even Flip. We didn't really get that. The closest thing we got was Ian Riccaboni and Caprice Coleman mentioning it. I think they acknowledged, they said, where is Marty Scurll and why did it take so long for Cody, Paige, and Flip to hit the ring? So I don't know. I don't know if that's just Ian trying to be the voice of us, the viewers, or if that's purposeful. And I mean, the Young Bucks weren't on the show at all this week. So that's kind of my hope, is maybe next week they return to the show and all of this is addressed.
Yeah. I imagine that it's not going to go away, but it may not be worked the way that we are expecting it to get worked. It may be one of those things that gets down the line mentioned rather than like explicitly talked about now.
That's fair, but okay, so here's my last Bullet Club question for the week before we finally move on to somebody else on the roster. Is Cody and Kenny done?
Cody and Kenny...
We never got really any resolution at Supercard of Honor. Going into that show, I was convinced that we were going to get some sort of big storyline progression with Bullet Club. One of them was going to be the leader, the other one was going to be out of Bullet Club. Either Cody was getting kicked out or Kenny was quitting to go be with Coda as the Golden Lovers, one way or another. And we didn't. We still, you know, this week when they made their entrance, Caprice and Ian were kind of like, there's Cody who might be the leader of Bullet Club. And Kenny is still kind of maybe the leader of Bullet Club. But that, I don't know, is that, like, nothing was resolved. And I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a story of two titles right now. So we have Cody going after the ROH World Championship title. That's what he is now, like dedicated and focused on. Meanwhile, in New Japan, for those who don't follow New Japan, or maybe you're just not following Kenny Omega, Kenny has been named the challenger to Okada, who is the current IWGP heavyweight champion. So Okada and Kenny and Omega have had their matches in the past. It's a 1-1-1 record. So they are at this they're at this turning point. And at Dominion in June for New Japan, that match will happen. So that could end up with a title change. Now, Okada has held and defended the title for 12 defenses, which he's getting closer and closer to the all-time record of days of holding on to this belt. For Omega to get this belt at this point, that is a huge story. And the story building towards Dominion is kind of focused on that rather than who's the leader of the Bullet Club. I think now they are refocused on titles, on belts, on championships, and the Bullet Club stuff is just going to have to sit in the background for the moment.
Yeah, but it seems weird for Kenny to even still be in Bullet Club. Do we see him hanging out with the Bullet Club guys in New Japan, or is it just him and Kota these days?
I mean, what do we even see of him on Being the Elite anymore? I mean, we have two episodes, and it's just been him and Kota, so... We don't get a sense that he is very attached to Bullet Club right now. We don't even see him with the New Japan Bullet Club guys.
Yes, but I guess he's still officially in the group. I don't know. I'm hoping this is all by design and we're building to some sort of big storyline around All In, maybe, in the fall. And we'll get some sort of something with Bullet Club there where some sort of something's figured out one way or another.
Yeah, if they were going to really like refocus on this storyline, having that culmination or some like major moment of it happen at All In makes a lot of sense.
All right. We'll have to wait and see as usual.
One last thing about this match, about this six-man match. So the end, obviously Marty, you know, hits Cody with the umbrella. What was weird to those of us who were watching the episode and had seen the live taping is that didn't end from there. They cut it off. They cut the episode off at that shot. Basically, Cody gets hit and that's when it ends. There was some stuff after that I was surprised that they left on the cutting room floor.
Like what?
If it's not part, if it's not relevant to television, then it's not really a spoiler, I guess.
Well, it was just interesting that there was like a shoving.
Or is it a spoiler? Do you think maybe next week they show us like after we went off the air, this happened?
I mean, that's entirely possible. So maybe those who are spoiler adverse, let's say potential spoiler, it wasn't a major thing. But after the shot happens, there's a shoving match. There's like some actual like physical contact between him and Cody, and there's like some shoving back and forth. So that to me seemed like it would make it into the episode, given that it was actually like a physical altercation, but it didn't.
Intriguing.
Yes. But yeah, you're right. Maybe it'll come back in next episode. I don't think it will, but it could.
Yeah, they've done that before, I think. Not often, but it's a production tactic.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
So, opening contest this week, Jay Lethal, Punishment Martinez. This is Jay Lethal's, what did he call it? His Road to Redemption, maybe?
Yes.
Or his Road to Glory?
Something like that.
The idea is Lethal wants to be the world champion. He hasn't held gold in a couple of years now. And he's decided that the way to prove to management and to himself that he deserves to be world champion again is to go back and defeat everybody who has defeated him in the past. Punishment Martinez had a pinfall victory over Jay Lethal in November as part of the Survival of the Fittest tournament. So Lethal requested this match against Punishment. 16-minute match, like pretty long, and I liked it. I thought it was a solid match. The opening, you said before we went on the air that it didn't feel quite as hot on television as in the arena.
Not quite. I want everyone to remember that when you go to a TV taping, they tape four episodes. So this was the last of four. So, you know, the audience, while still very engaged, is definitely losing a little bit of steam. So for this to kind of kick things off with the fourth and final, like, episode taping, it kicked things off in just, like, the perfect way to, like, get everyone back up and, like, the energy back in the room. It doesn't quite come off that way in the episode. I feel like maybe it just loses it a little bit from just being on TV and rather than seeing it live. That being said, any match that starts off in the first like minute with seven suicide dives, like that's not going to be something you're going to ignore.
Yeah, I put that. He always does this trio of suicide dives, and Ian Riccoboni always calls it the same way with his Schoolhouse Rock reference. So I liked that, and then he just kept going, and I put that in my report, is by the time he hit that seventh one, I don't know what it was like for you, but on me watching it on television, it's the building sounded so loud.
Yes.
It sounded like people were losing their minds. Even Ian and Caprice on commentary were like pumped full of energy, and like you could hear them bouncing in their seats like, oh my God.
Yes. So my partner is a very, probably would say that right now his favorite wrestler, like working today, is Jay Lethal. And so, I mean, he was absolutely losing his mind. We all were like and that started the match. That was within the first like minute of the match to happen. And, both Lethal and, Punishment are big guys. They are like to see Punishment get dived on seven times. That's a lot of physical energy, and it was fantastic to see.
Yeah, the story of the match is your classic, you know, Lethal's this, he's young still, but he's a veteran. He's smart, and so he just targeted Martinez's left knee for the entire match. and it wound up getting him the victory. Martinez went for his jumping spin kick. His knee buckled under his weight.
Oh.
And Lethal followed up with a lethal injection for the win.
I have to give Punishment a lot of credit here for selling an injury like that. The physical reaction he had when he went for that kick and his knee buckled, like, that was some great work right there. Because it was very well crafted. The selling didn't go over the top, but it clearly was inhibiting his performance. And Lethal knew exactly how to target it in ways that, you know, were effective throughout the match and culminating in being able to pull off all of his major moves just flawlessly onto Punishment. But the it all starts with how well Punishment sells that knee injury.
Yeah, I don't think I give Martinez enough credit a lot of times. He's good when he's on his strong offense, you know, when he hits his choke slam, the dives over the ropes, things like that. But he's definitely growing as a well-rounded performer, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's some character work to be done there. I often joke about this, but I'm kind of serious that I think that he should never talk. I really don't think that he's just, his promos are always real stiff, and it would always be, it's always better to see him in action. He's got good visual imagery in his entrance and everything. So to stick with the images, to stick with the actual wrestling, to reduce the amount that is of emphasis placed on any kind of talking or performative characteristics. He's still green in that way. But he has so many of the fundamentals down that really make for a promising and enjoyable wrestler to watch. And one of them is being able to sell something in a realistic way and keep the match going. And he is physically in the ring. I forget how big he is. I forget how absolutely giant he is, because he made Jay Lethal kind of look small, which is, Lethal's not really a small guy. So for his physical force and his physical intimidation, he does really well. He just, there's just some character stuff there. There's some dynamics that need to be worked out. There's definitely a need for him to have more to do. And this stuff with Hangman, that's a really good path for him. It just seems like he keeps getting stuck in these kind of dead end routes.
Well, so you asked earlier, what do we do with Punishment after this loss, after his feud with Hangman Page, which is probably only going to last another month or so? I've been thinking for a while that Punishment should have his own stable.
Huh.
In the same vein of The Undertaker's Ministry of Darkness, or Gangrel and the Brood. I think, or even Decay over in TNA the past couple of years. Anytime there's somebody with this kind of gothic, dark gimmick, I feel you don't see vampires hanging out by themselves. This one vampire dude who just wanders around by himself. It's always a brood. It's always a coven of witches, right? And I think that would be really cool, is if they found a couple people, maybe a tag team maybe a woman to put with Punishment, or a woman and another guy, like a big bulky guy, kind of more of a Beer City Bruiser, not Beer City Bruiser, more of like a Hanson body type, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think, yeah, some sort of weird group of dark, misfit goth kids would be really cool. And it could definitely benefit what you were saying about how you don't think he should talk on the mic. Get somebody who can.
He should get...
Bring back Truth Martini or somebody like that.
Yeah, well, definitely don't bring back Truth Martini. But I love this idea, and I think that ROH could use a little bit of the New Japan model of having more factions in play. I think it's always exciting to have a little bit of that. There's drawbacks to having stables. A lot of those drawbacks come from not being able to see really great wrestlers fight one another because they're in the same stable. But that being said, someone like Martinez, if he had some gothy or imagine someone like Evil from LIJ, being able to back up Martinez. Imagine someone with a little bit of charisma and doing the more flamboyant gothiness, being able to be a hype man for Martinez. That's a really good route. You've sold me on this idea. I'm behind this.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, and there's so many different options, and especially with the six-man titles. There's a lot of times in ROH where the six-man titles, there aren't obvious feuds. It's like, oh, where do we go from here? Because there aren't too many three-man natural teams. So, hey, here's another great opportunity, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think there's anybody on the active roster right now who is a logical fit in my mind, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, who's working that kind of style right now? We've got the guys in the Kingdom.
We haven't seen her since the Women of Honor Championship Tournament, but Holly Dead?
Oh, that would be cool. And what a great way to be able to, like, further enhance the relationship between Ring of Honor and Women of Honor. That would be really neat. I don't see them doing that, but I'd like to see that.
Yeah, because, I mean, other than that, I don't know. You're not going to put Josh Woods or Jonathan Gresham or anybody like that in this kind of stable.
No.
You could try. I mean, are you familiar with the Undertaker's Ministry of Darkness from back in the 90s?
Very vaguely.
Well, the whole idea was he would kidnap, like, directionless wrestlers and then rebrand them in his image. So he took JBL, who John Bradshaw Layfield, the Cowboy, abducted him, brainwashed him, and then he became the Acolyte, and he wore all black and still wrestled the same, but he gave him a new look. So it's not impossible, but I don't know if there's anybody who really jumps out that I think would benefit from that kind of makeover.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someone like Josh Woods, if that was, you know, something you could imagine, a goth Josh Woods.
Who knows? It's pro wrestling. I can imagine anything.
Yeah. I think you don't want to necessarily get too stuck on, like, what we know of the guys that we are watching. And, you know, I definitely don't see, like, a Jonathan Gresham, like, doing that, because I think that Jonathan Gresham might be more well served as a member of a six man. But, yeah, someone like Josh Wood, someone who's, like, you know, our up-and-comers are, like, former, just recently, Future of Honor guys who are just getting their, like, you know, getting any kind of momentum in the ring. Like, who knows? This would be an interesting avenue to take.
How about Punishment abducting the dogs and turning them into the bats?
I mean, I did say that Punishment needed a hype man, and now I'm regretting that, because now I'm just imagining Rhett Titus all in black being Punishment Martinez's hype man.
I'm sold. Book it.
Yeah, I mean, that'll get some... Come on. Don't you want to see that? You want to see that show?
Yeah, that's my... Take my money. So, Lethal got the win here. This is the checkmark number one on his redemption list. Looking at people... Like, it's funny, because his story is, I want to beat the people who beat me. And Ian and Caprice pointed this out too. That's not a very long list. I went back as far as, 8 months or something like that through Lethal's match listing. The only people currently with wins over him in that period, Dalton Castle, back in March of the 16th anniversary, Matt Taven in November, Silas Young in September, and Chuck E. T got the surprise pinfall on Lethal on a triple threat 2 weeks ago on War of the Worlds.
Yeah. Can we even really count that as a defeat? I mean, it was, but I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. He got the pinfall, so that's enough, okay. Right? You don't want to let that stick. You want to get that taken care of.
All right. Watch out, Chuck E. T. Lethal's coming for you.
Yeah. Well, actually, him and Chuck E. T. were supposed to have a match at this last set of tapings before Lethal got injured in his match with Takahashi. So I think we will see that singles match at some point, just maybe not as soon as we had originally intended.
Yeah.
And Lethal versus Taven, that's a clear television main event sometime in the near future.
Yeah.
But Castle and Silas, I don't know. I mean, those are your top two singles champions right now. Are you going to have Lethal beat either of your champions in a non-title match? I don't know. That's what leaves me wondering where Lethal goes from here. Taven and Chucky make sense, but after that, I don't know where his redemption road takes us.
TV title? I mean, he could take on Young and get that TV title.
Yeah, assuming Silas is still champion after defending against Austin Aries in a couple weeks, defending against Joe Hendry on the Honor UK on the Honor United Tour. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of, that's projections down the line, but something tells me that Silas is probably going to get through those matches without losing the belt. And if he does, he might be a really great stop on this like Lethal Redemption tour.
Yeah, like is Dalton your favorite in ROH? Who's your favorite?
Yeah, I would probably say Dalton is my favorite at ROH. I like a lot of the guys. I have some favorites in Women of Honor too, but Dalton is probably Dalton is the reason that I got sold on ROH, like currently. So I really do have to say that he's my favorite because of that. There's probably guys that I'm enjoying right now a little bit more just because I'm not seeing a ton of Castle, but I always enjoy seeing him in the ring. I like to see what he has to do, and I think that he's just getting started as far as like really making a name for himself. So yeah, he's my favorite.
Yeah, in the same way, if I was pressed, I'd probably have to say Silas Young is my favorite guy. Just I always enjoy every one of his feuds and his match, his, you know, even bickering with the fans. Just I really enjoy his performances all the time. So anytime any name is brought up as, oh, what about a feud with this guy, Sauce? I'm like, sounds great.
Yeah.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
So, one more match on this week's TV, and this was an unusual match. We come out of commercial break, generic ROH music hits. There's no video screen, it just says ROH on the Videotron. And out walks Joey Diesel Daddiego.
Yeah.
And yeah, literally, I looked it up. The last time that we've seen Daddiego on an ROH screen in an ROH ring was June 24th, 11 months ago. That's not like, he's been off TV for a couple weeks. It's almost a full year since we've seen him. Very unusual in that sense that he's all of a sudden back. And Ian and Caprice sold it. They had kind of the same reaction of like, wow, like we haven't seen this guy in ages. Actually, the last time we saw Daddiego, June 24th television, the combination of Joey and Cheeseburger defeated Sho and Yo, the Tempura Boys.
Huh.
So they got that big win over Sho and Yo, and look at where Daddiego has gone since then, and look at where they've gone since then. They're now like top big name stars in New Japan, while Cheeseburger just gets beat up, squashed by Bully Ray day after day. And Daddiego works 80 hours a week in a steel mill, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. It was an interesting promo to cut. So Daddiego is from New York, but I felt like the promo was trying to sell him as like from Pittsburgh. And that was just kind of curious as far as like referencing steel mills and you know, kind of coming out as this like, you know, rougher like blue collar or worker. It was an interesting package in which to sell him to the Pittsburgh crowd.
Did you see the picture-in-picture promo in the arena?
No, which is why watching this, I honestly don't remember even seeing this match at the live taping. I think this might have been a bathroom break match, but they didn't show the promo in the arena. What I just mean is that like watching it at home, like watching the episode, like it's weird that they chose that as the promo for that's the promo for this match.
Well, so my thoughts at the time when the match kind of started, I almost thought, hey, is this a shoot? Like, is this... Because they also mentioned right after the bell started that Ian says Daddy O's been talking about, like, if he can't pick up a win, he might be considering, you know, retiring from wrestling. And I kind of thought, like, well, maybe this is all true. Maybe he actually does work like 40, 80 hours a week at this other job. You know, wrestling was always just a part-time interest for him. And he's thinking that he's not going to make a career as a wrestler and he's going to turn it in. That's why we haven't seen him wrestle since in the last 11 months, because he's literally like, he basically retired and ROH convinced him to come out of retirement for one last match, you know, let him have like one last television match, put over Shane Taylor in the process, and then he'll hang up his wrestling boots for good.
Yeah, I just don't see that. I mean, I don't think that there's an end for him. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not educated enough about Joey Dadiego. This whole push with Shane Taylor and these matches, they're not adding up to me. I'm not sure what they're adding up to.
Well, so that was the thing that then kind of confused me. That was the idea. I thought that was the story in my head, maybe. I know nothing about Joey Dadiego, the human being. But the fact, adding up the fact that he hasn't wrestled in 11 months, and now he's out here and they're talking about how he's thinking of quitting wrestling, and he works 80 hours a week, I thought that all kind of adds up that as being, like, legitimate. But then he got in some good offense. This wasn't a squash. This wasn't Bully Ray and Cheeseburger. He hit a Death Valley driver on Taylor. He hit a bunch of solid punches. They talked about how he's a Golden Gloves winner. And he didn't lose. Like, he got demolished by Taylor. He took a splash through two steel chairs at ringside.
Yep.
But the official verdict was no contest. It wasn't like referee stoppage. It wasn't Taylor wins by count out or anything. It was a no contest. So I don't know. Like, if this was Dadiego's last wrestling match, that's kind of an odd finish then. You'd think they would have just given Taylor the win in the record books.
Yeah. So, like, is that building a story? Are we gonna see more Dadiego?
Yeah, I don't know. Is this his return? And this, so maybe this, maybe I was interpreting it wrong. Maybe this was the reintroduction of Joey. We haven't seen him 11 months, but he's back and he's got, you know, we're going to emphasize his boxing background a bit more. He had his hands taped up like a boxer. Mm-hmm. He got beat up here, but he put up a decent showing and he didn't lose. So maybe this is the start of a feud with Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, that would be something for Shane Taylor to do other than just, like, beat up. Like, I mean, because this I originally thought was just a squash match, but it's not really. You got a fair amount of minutes in this match, despite the fact that, like, at the end of it, it was a no contest and Dadiego got his butt kicked. But, like, it wasn't just him choke slamming a guy and, like, the match being over in a minute and a half. There was some fighting here. There was Dadiego puts up a decent defense for a little while. So this no contest and that raises interesting questions. That raises an interesting question of, you know, what's the purpose here? And can we give Shane Taylor something more interesting to do, an actual feud, instead of just him being a jobber to the stars?
Well, okay, so we've talked a lot about Dadiego, but Taylor here splashes Dadiego through the seats of two steel chairs at ringside, and then kind of goes nuts. You know, he chokeslams a security guard, or no, he chokeslams a referee, beats up three security guards in the ring. So I don't know, why was Taylor so mad? Like, what caused him to all of a sudden go berserk this week?
Yeah.
When he's usually kind of calm, cool, and collected, like, give me my money and I'm happy. B, the commentators talked about attacking that referee. That's definitely a fine, if not a suspension. Taylor's sole motivation on television is making money. So why would he do something that would result in him getting fined? He just cost himself money.
Yeah. Yeah. What's invoking this reaction from Shane Taylor? Also, who told the security guys to come out one at a time? Like, obviously, you guys gotta collectively come out if you're gonna try and take on a guy who's twice your size.
Well, and you know, I come away from this segment going, Joe Koff better hurry up and hire a new enforcer team, because this is what happens. You know, he fired Bully Ray's enforcer, And now look at what's going on, right? Now referees are getting attacked and security.
Ooh, is that part of it? Like, is that also fitting into
this? Maybe they're linked.
Ugh.
Yeah, maybe it's setting up that. Maybe, what if Joe Koff hired Shane Taylor as the new enforcer?
Oh, no.
Like, just, you know, instead of having this guy run roughshod on everybody, use this guy to stop everybody else from running roughshod. I don't know. But fun little thing for me, though, in coming into this whole segment with Daddy Ego and security guards getting beat up, how long have you been watching ROH?
I've been watching probably a little spottily starting in January and then with regularity starting in February. I've caught up on a lot of stuff that happened prior to that. So not, you know, episode to episode, obviously, but like, you know, watch some specials from 2017 and 2016 and I've caught up on a lot of storylines that had happened prior to this. But regular episode watching starting in February of this year.
Ah, so you weren't really familiar with Joey Diesel Dadiego prior to this?
No, I was not.
Okay, so the thing that sticks out to me, and the only reason I bring it up because it's kind of funny based on this whole segment, is Dadiego debuted on ROH television as a security guard.
Huh.
He was one of these security guards, just like these guys this week getting beat up. And Truth Martini paid him off in order to cheat and help Jay Lethal and Donovan Dijak steal some victories and pick up some things. And then eventually, I think he was fired as a security guard, and so he joined House of Truth as a wrestler. At the time, he was Jay Diesel, J-A-Y, mm-hmm. And then they turned that into Joey Diesel Dadiego, not to be confused with Kevin Diesel Nash. And you could see why those two would get confused, because spitting images of each other.
Yeah, definitely. Super, super confusing there.
But yeah, the stuff with him, I think he joined the House of Truth as the heel security guard, like November 2014. Mm-hmm. So that was like 3.5 years ago, and Dadiego hasn't done a lot since then. He turned babyface, he teamed with Cheeseburger for a while there, but that's kind of it. That's been his career. So if he's back, I'm intrigued. If he's not back and this was a one-time appearance, I'm confused.
Yeah, I will be incredibly confused if they don't do anything with this. If it was just like, oh, it, you know, there you go. Another Shane Taylor.
We got some time to fill. Taylor, go out there, just beat up some security guards. Joey, you know, I know you haven't wrestled in 11 months, but we're going to push you through some chairs, okay? All right. Solid.
Yeah, this wasn't a local guy that they got, like, from the local circuits, from the local feds. Like, this was someone in ROH. This is a guy who, like, you know, had to come and travel over here for it. So I hope that this is going to lead to something. Shane Taylor could use something interesting to do. Give me a reason to want to follow what Shane Taylor is up to.
Yes. Well, we got the Honor United Tour this week. Shane Taylor's got a couple matches. He's facing Scorpio Sky. He's facing Toru Yano on Saturday in London. That's going to be an interesting match because Toru is basically a comedy wrestler, right?
Yes. Toru Yano, for those who are not familiar with his fame in New Japan Pro Wrestling, is a very popular, very over New Japan Pro Wrestler who mainly wins through cheating and avoiding as much physical contact as possible. He also likes to promote his DVDs, so he'll often like have quite a few of them stuffed in his jacket or his shirt.
Yes, we've definitely seen him on ROH TV once or twice, because that sounds familiar.
Yes, yeah. No, he's not been... I mean, he might be familiar if you've been watching ROH.
I think him and Colt Cabana might have had a match on ROH TV, which makes a lot of sense.
Makes a ton of sense. They're very compatible wrestlers in that way. Toru Yano is either everyone's favorite wrestler or nobody's favorite wrestler, but he's very popular in Japan.
All right. Well, we're quickly running out of time on this show, but yes, Honor United this week, Thursday in Scotland, Saturday in London, Sunday in Doncaster. I believe these are all going to be streaming live on Honor Club. So afternoon shows, like Thursday in Scotland, 7 p.m. local time, which is around 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But luckily, I am free this week, so I'll be doing live coverage of those, written coverage of those shows on The Torch. If you don't get a chance to watch them, we'll discuss them briefly at the start of next week's podcast. Mm-hmm. Dalton Castle is back from injury, so that's good news. So is Jay Lethal. And a bunch of title matches on the line. Briscoes are defending against Cody and Hangman Page. Dolphins defending the world title against Evil. We got the Kingdom, SoCal Censored, and the Humbucks in a triple threat trios match for the six-man titles. Sumi Sakai defending against a woman named Chardonnay, and tons of other matches. You can visit rohwrestling.com. You can see the whole match listings up there for sure. Anything jump out to you?
I'm interested to see the outside talent come in for this tour. We've got some UK-based guys, Joe Hendry. We got Mark Haskins coming in for this. It's going to be interesting to see what they do.
The ROH debut of NWA World Champion.
That's right. And, you know, with the announcements of last week, with Cody going up and potentially getting to challenge Aldis, it's going to be cool to see him on the tour. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the story was on Twitter. He had requested this match. He said, okay, I'll defend the NWA title against Cody at All In, but I want a match against the Young Bucks in Scotland. And so it's Aldis and Mark Haskins taking on the Bucks that first night.
Yes, and Haskins is a PWG guy, so I'm going to guess that like he's got some experience against the Bucks. It's going to be a fun show to watch.
Cool. Yeah, I'm interested for this tour. We got Japanese wrestlers, we got British wrestlers, we got the ROH crew. It's going to be interesting to see how these unfold. So we'll talk about all those next week on the show. Also next week on ROH Television, Sumi Sakai defends the Women of Honor title for the first time against Jenny Rose. I'm hoping that's an event of next week's show. I'd love to see the first Women of Honor championship match be a TV main event.
Yeah, I mean, if they're really going to like commit to this title, they should make that the main event. That would be an excellent use. And with all the push that they did through the War of the Worlds tour with Sumi and with Jenny, like, please, let's see this as a main event. Let's sell this as something important to watch.
Indeed. And we'll find out. So, as always, you can reach us, talkinghonor@gmail.com. Any questions or thoughts on the UK tour on, are there any cool indie wrestlers we don't know about that you think would be perfect in a stable with Punishment Martinez? Send us your thoughts on all that. You can find me on Twitter @TalkingHonor. You can find Emily on Twitter at
ForkedPGH, ForkedPGH.
And you can listen to, if you're a PW Torch VIP subscriber, you can listen to the very first episode of Elite Repeat, our brand new podcast, sometime this week. I'm not sure when. We'll let you know. Follow us on Twitter and you'll see for sure. But definitely this week, that is dropping in your ears.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, as always. And we'll talk to you next week on the other side of the UK tour.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.